And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. One of the things about being on the radio as long as I have is it gives you a chance to go back and check out what you did. On my website at radioinsidescoop.com, I have archived every single show I've ever done. Sometimes the old broadcasts don't work. If ever, by the way, it doesn't, you can give me an email and I'll put it back on the site. I've changed servers many times since I began in radio 5-6 years ago. But the topics are still there. Every show I've ever done is listed on my website with a date. And so I went back today to find out when I did the first story on torture. Today, it seems obvious that the Bush administration is torturing, but people forget that 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years ago, that was an extreme thing to say. If you said that the Bush administration was torturing innocent people, or torturing anyone at all for that matter, you were treated as some kind of a kook. And it's always been my practice on the Inside Scoop to separate between, well, real, awful things that are going on, and conspiracy theories. There are many that want to assert everything about the Bush administration. Many of those things are true. Some of them, like the idea that, you know, they blew up the World Trade Center, are false. And one of the things that people who really don't know what they're talking about will do is conflate them all together, and that makes us all look bad. But I have strived for the almost 6 years now I've been on radio to separate the truth from the falsity and to bring the inside scoop on stories that are considered radical at the time, but that I have strong evidence to believe are true. Today, it is commonplace knowledge, all the Bush administration did. But I went back to find the very first time I ever used the word torture on my radio show. And I could do that, actually. I can do that kind of search. Maybe I talked about things before then, I don't know. But the first time I used torture was June 13th, 2004, in a headline show titled, Torture, How Bush Made Sadism an American Value. Pretty strong words for 5 years ago, sandwiched in a show between banned public smoking indoors and a show Mark's first time on Air America. Oh, those were the days. But here's what I wrote on June 13th, 2004. Torture, unlawful detention, and violation of international law and norms are no accident under the Bush administration. Despite Bush's public protestations, they were not done by Army privates, quote, acting on their own, unquote. They are official government policy. Learn more on tonight's Inside Scoop. Wow, what a difference 5 years make. When I wrote those words in June 2004, a lot of people would have just assumed that it was crazy talk. Abu Ghraib was, after all, clearly the machinations of a 19-year-old West Virginian woman named Linda England, right? And her boss, Charles Grainer. They figured it all out. They were the ones who decided to use nudity and stress positions and attach electrodes to people's genitalia. That's just some crazy run-amok people. I had Republicans at the time. This was actually before Mike Lane became a regular on my show, though Mike Lane has certainly said in the years to follow, hey, you know, a few renegade crazy people, you find them in every organization, diminishing the idea that torture was an approved form of action under the prior administration. Well, it's now known. There's no dispute anymore. The 213-page report put out by the Senate Armed Services Committee of Carl Levin gives details, even more details than the legal memos put out by the Obama administration. The Obama administration has shown how the Bush administration ordered these tactics, and the Carl Levin's terrific Senate Armed Services Committee report, the result of a 2-year investigation, that began really when the Democrats first took over Congress 2 years ago, gives it to us in mind-numbing detail. These were not an accident. These were decided at the very highest level of the Bush administration. And I mean higher than the lawyers. For all the attacks on my old Yale Law School classmate, John Yoo, and they're pretty much all richly deserved. It should be clear that even he was not, let's say, providing his best advice to the Bush administration. He was just following orders like everyone else. The policy had been determined. The information had been determined. And then it was all about fixing the facts around the policy. Fixing the policy around what the Bush administration wanted to be true. You know, the Downing Street memo, for all its controversy, really just had a nice turn of phrase. You could say in, what is it, 5 words? Fixing the facts around the policy? 6 words. Fixing facts around policy, 4 words. Basically, you could say in 4 words what I had been saying all along, and not just me, but many others have been saying all along, ever since the so-called global war on terror began. And now we find new tidbits. One that I found specifically rankling was the idea that we continued to torture people because they never talked about a connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. This was a problem. The Bush administration, as we now know, on January 30th, 2001, big difference, the Bush administration, 10 days after coming into office, had already divided Iraq into various oil fields. The determination to invade Iraq, the discussion of it, predated even September 11th. They had to find some connection with Iraq. Cheney said it was true. Cheney said that an Iraqi intelligence chief met Mohammed Atta, the leader of the September 11th attackers, somewhere in Prague in the Czech Republic. They had to find some proof. And if they couldn't find any proof, they would manufacture it. Despite the fact the CIA and the FBI and Army Intelligence and everyone told the Bush administration, Cheney and Rumsfeld and Connally's point, that there wasn't any working together of Shia extremists like, the Iranians, but that's not what I'm talking about. I meant to say Sunni extremists like Al-Qaeda and secular leadership, the Ba'athist leadership of Saddam Hussein. There's actually really 3 groups working here, and they don't work together. They don't like each other. One is the Shia extremists, the ones that the Iranian government supports today. One is the Sunni extremists. They're the ones of Al-Qaeda. They're the ones who are supporting the their own sort of global war. In fact, one of the things the word global war on terrorism does is it helps give credence to Al-Qaeda's notion that there's some massive crusade going on between Islam and Christianity. And the secular dictators, people like Saddam Hussein, who control much of Sunni Middle East today, people like the head of Egypt or the head of Saudi Arabia. Brutal dictators, to be sure, but are brutal dictators, if you will. These are the brutal dictators that are willing to work with America. And frankly, I guess, compared with the Sunni or the Shia extremists, one can argue they're less bad. Sure, they're all evil, and they all torture people, and they all cut off people's legs and so forth. But hey, some of them are willing to talk with us. I guess that makes them better. Saddam Hussein was actually in the reasonable group. I mean, Saddam Hussein would talk to us. Saddam Hussein accepted aid from us. Saddam Hussein would shake Don Rumsfeld's hand. Saddam Hussein would take chemical weapons from United States companies and use them with our wink and nod to murder the Kurds who were in his way in his war with Iran. The point is that Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden hated each other. They were each striving to be leaders of the Arab and larger Islamic world. They didn't work together. but we needed that connection. How the heck are we going to justify to the American people going to a war in Iraq that has no connection to September 11th? Going to the war in Afghanistan, that was easy, right? Al-Qaeda was in Afghanistan. They were supported by the Taliban. They came. They killed 3,000 Americans. And every single member of the Senate and every member of the House save one, every Democrat save one, and every Republican, 534 out of 535 supported the war in Afghanistan. That was easy. But the war in Iraq? How are you going to justify taking out a dictator so much like the dictator of Egypt or the dictator of Saudi Arabia or the dictator of Libya or the dictator of virtually every country in the Sunni Arab world and in the Shia Arab world? How are you going to justify taking him out when he didn't have any connection to September 11th? Well, because torture often gets people to say what they don't want to say. Not tell the truth, mind you. Please, that's a very different thing. Not tell the truth, but simply say things that you want them to say. The idea was if we torture people long enough, someone will claim some connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda, and therefore Cheney will be able to use that. Aha! One of our terrorists detained in Guantanamo Bay is going to talk. There's the proof. The irony is, despite all the torture, we never did get even that proof. So what was the torture? I mean, the Bush administration has said, we don't torture. We don't torture. We're very careful not to torture. And using some of the same techniques used by, well, the Chinese communists who tortured Americans during the Korean War. Oh, not tortured, mistreated. Mistreatment, is that too severe? I mean, we don't want to say that we did the same things that they did, but we did. So how do you justify it then? It gets very confusing. One of the things, though, that doctors who watch, let's just say, mistreatment occur do is they're very careful not to leave marks. There's all kinds of ways to mistreat human beings without leaving permanent damage or marks on the skin. That way, you all have plausible deniability later. One way is temperature. Take the temperature down to sub-freezing temperatures. Burn it up like an oven. Generally, it doesn't leave marks on the body. Diets. Well, let's just not allow anyone to have solid food. Right? That's it. Nothing wrong with that. Nudity. Nudity won't kill you. It won't. It's extremely degrading. I don't think any of us would like to be in a position where we're nude before a bunch of people who regularly beat us and interrogate us. It'd be kind of hard to concentrate on their questions, wouldn't it? But it doesn't leave marks on the body. Then all these sexual things. Remember the idea that everything that happened in Abu Ghraib was bizarre, using the female interrogators and sexually suggestive garb to try to get them to talk because their religion forbade looking at women's private parts in such a way? Was that really necessary? I've often felt bad, actually, in that particular case, a little bit, for the interrogators. I think it's degrading to them, not just to the so-called victims. But let's not dampen violence. I mean, you know, you could say, well, you know, heat, cold, sleep deprivation for 11 days straight. No, I can go without sleep for a few hours. I once went 2 nights in a row without sleeping. I haven't gone 11 nights. And even after that 2 nights, I was pretty sick afterwards. But, you know, I've gone without eating. I fasted for a day. I do so every year on Yom Kippur. So what's fasting for several days? It's just, you know, I've been in 100-degree temperatures, so what if it's 120? I've been in 20-degree temperatures with, you know, heavy coat on. I probably wouldn't want to be naked in that. So you see, they take things that are ordinary and just push them to the extremes. But there was violence as well. Everything from slapping the face to punching in the stomach to a really cute technique called walling. Walling. What a nice way to describe slamming someone into the wall again and again and again. Some 30 times. Sometimes, because they didn't want to leave permanent marks, they would even put the sort of whiplash collar on the person to protect their neck as they're slamming their face into the wall. Kind of weird, isn't it? Kind of reminds you of those Nazi doctors that kept all those very good records as they were, well, even more greatly, obviously, mistreating the people in the concentration camps. But you could keep them without sleep, but only for 11 days. You could hang them from the ceiling by their arms, but only for 6 hours. You could push them into the wall 30 times. But it had to be one of those sort of fakeish walls. I don't know how thick the wall board had to be. You could pour water on them, very cold water, but it would be 41 degrees. Not 40, mind you. 40 torture. 41, that's just fine. And, of course, waterboarding. Now, waterboarding, we've talked about a lot. People know about waterboarding. I've done many shows on it. That's one of the things that came out first. And yes, of course, it was used in the Inquisition. Somehow, taking a technique from the Spanish Inquisition didn't ring any bells, that maybe it was the wrong idea. But what's fascinating is when you go through the genesis of all of this, when you go through how this thing came to be, I have always said, and I look back to prove it, I have always said, I said as long ago as 5 years ago, that this had come from the very top. That this had come from, in my view, when we ever investigate, if we do finally investigate, and we're going to talk about the scope of the investigation, who should be prosecuted, that's what's mostly in the news. I just think it's important to know what we're talking about before we go into who we should prosecute. I think we will find that most all roads lead to Dick Cheney. I mean, to Bush, too. Clearly, he approved of it. Partly, I think Bush gets off because, well, he's not as smart as Dick Cheney. Maybe it's hard to be, maybe evil requires a certain level of intelligence. But I think you'll find that most all roads lead back to Dick Cheney. And that even John Yoo, the lawyers, when you look at these things, you know, 41 degrees, not 40, or deprived sleep for 11 days, not 12, striking things that where in the heck do they get this stuff? You find lawyers bending over backwards to do what Dick Cheney wanted to do. Just as a CIA analyst would bend over backwards, as he would go and literally stand by their side as they're looking through, sifting through thousands of pieces of data to say, well, here's one. Yeah, this guy curveball. Yeah, we'll accept this. We'll ignore the other 999. This one shows that Iraq has nuclear weapons. Fixing the facts around the intelligence. So, in this legalese, in these Justice Department memos, they talk about stuffing people into dark boxes, very constrained boxes, where they would sit in the dark for hours at a time, sometimes for a month at a time. And they had to say that it didn't shock the conscience, because that's the legal standard, shocking the conscience. Would a reasonable person have their conscience shocked by these techniques? Is your conscience shocked? I mean, we understand that in the course of law enforcement, people are going to get handcuffed. That might hurt your wrist. We understand it's not pleasant to be in jail. But they had to argue that this stuff didn't shock the conscience because, well, that's the ruling here. And there's really very little law on this. Shackling detainees to floors or ceilings. Ceilings? Ceilings? Shackling detainees to ceilings to keep them awake for more than 7 days. Then they had to allow a normal period of sleep before starting again. You could pack them into the tight, dark containers for more than 8 hours at a time, but you have to allow 6 hours outside the box. 18 hours in a coffin, 6 hours outside. Well, Amnesty International, the American Civil Liberties Union, they've come to the conclusion, not surprising, that the legal memos were, quote, meant to support conclusions that were predetermined, unquote, rather than to produce a credible reading of the law, fixing the facts around the policy. What else do we got? I want to be complete here. It's hard. I mentioned the diets, slapping their faces, forcibly grabbing them. That's kind of interesting. Lengthy, I haven't mentioned the stress positions. Lengthy, stressful, and uncomfortable standing positions and sitting positions. Holding them with cold water. I mentioned it was 41 degrees. Holding them with cold water for at least 20-minute periods while the detainees wore a diaper. Well, they wore a diaper. Well, I guess that's better than being nude. Maybe we should have put them with a large high chair and a rattle. You think that would have rattled them? Of course, one of the famous things that came out was that Abu Zubaydah apparently did not like insects. His psychologist, you think psychologists are working for you? Not these. Said he was afraid of insects. They said they're going to stick a stinging insect in his cell. It's hard to kill, I guess, if you're naked, shackled to a cell. And then apparently they only put a non-stinging insect in the cell, so they say. What else do we got here? The doctors were trying to make sure the patients didn't die. It's so embarrassing when you kill the people that you're torturing. So the slaps to the head and the gut could be painful, but not severe or lastingly painful. The water they used to douse them, I love this, had to be safe for drinking. they would take the amount of time that's used to cause hypothermia, which would be 30 minutes at 41 degrees, and they would just do it for 20 minutes at 41 degrees. Even the simulated drowning had a saline solution in it. How sweet. How kind. One of the fascinating things about the torture is that when we look at who is going to be prosecuted, and I do want to talk about that. We'll spend the whole second half of the hour on that. The Obama administration has said that the people who are just following orders that they believe to be legal are not going to be prosecuted. But perhaps the people who ordered the torture will. I want to get your views in the second half of the hour on whether you think that is the right distinction. But there are other people involved. And the president, the vice president, Condoleezza Rice, Dick Rumsfeld, Don Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, and the lawyers, people like John Yoo and Stephen Biden and like. In addition to the people who actually did the torture, there's a whole host of doctors and psychologists. And these are things that are interesting, too. Because doctors and psychologists are not supposed to use their license to harm people. The AMA, the American Medical Association, says that physicians must not be present when torture is used or threatened, quote, unquote. AMA guidelines allow doctors to treat detainees only if doing so is in the detainee's best interest and not to monitor their health, quote, so that torture can begin or continue. See, the way all of this began is when Americans were tortured in Korea by the Chinese or the North Koreans, as it is, they tried to develop a technique to have people withstand this kind of torture. It was the SERE, the Survival Evasion Resistance and Escape Program. So people would be taught, Americans would be taught how to withstand this kind of torture. And then, because Americans, some of them had been taught to withstand this kind of torture, I guess, some of them had not, they reverse engineered it. They said, okay, well, what are the things that they can't withstand? And then they went right back to, well, the Chinese communist ideas, which apparently were never explained. The American leadership never knew where these wonderful ideas came from. So, what do we get from this? What did we learn? What was the point of having the doctors and psychologists allow just so much pain and suffering, but not too much, to keep them alive and to make them miserable? Well, one of the things they learned was that Abu Zubaydah, the main one we were torturing, was found, quote, to have, this is from a Washington Post article, was found, quote, to have played a less important role in Al-Qaeda than initially believed, and that under harsh interrogation he provided little useful information about the organization's plans. Oops. Oops. Well, he did provide some information, right? That he did. And without knowing exactly what he provided, I guess it's hard to say whether or not it was all worth it. Totally apart from the legal problem, which I'll get to. But what about the moral problem? What if it were legal to torture? Will we learn anything? One of the things that two countries who've had to deal with a lot more terror than the United States have, Israel and Great Britain, have learned the hard way, is that torture almost never gives you useful information. Now, in both Britain and in Israel, innocent civilians have been targeted on a level that Americans can only imagine, particularly in Israel, but certainly also true in Great Britain during the IRA bombings and such. And yet they found, before both countries, a torture illegal, to their credit, that when you torture someone, they just say what you want them to say. The best example of this, the one I always give to Republicans when they're defending these techniques, is what happened to John McCain, who was brutally tortured by the North Vietnamese. At one point, McCain's spirits were so low and the torture was so great that he actually signed a document condemning the United States of America. Now, I do not say this to in any way impugn John McCain's honor. I disagree strongly with John McCain, but I'm not out to impugn his honor. I don't blame him. And I'm not ashamed to say I do the same thing. Sign anything. Just sign anything. Make the torture stop. Yeah, I did it. Whatever. What do you say I did? Killed such and such person on such and such dates. Yeah, whatever. Fine. Yeah, I did it. Just stop the torture, please. It doesn't matter whether it's true or not. So, we want to say there's a connection between Iraq and Al-Qaeda. Just torture somebody. Now, there are Republicans that argue that we did find useful information from Abu Zubaydah. And it's true, we did find some. Many of the people in the room, and again, I wasn't there. But many of the people in the room say that, most of this information was found before we tortured him. Okay, and there are ways to find out information apart from torture. There is, for example, trickery, which has worked astonishingly well in the past. But would we have found out the same information, useful information, from Abu Zubaydah if he hadn't been tortured? There's just no way to find out. For those of you that like my debates with Republicans, I plan to raise this issue with Mike Lane. You will hear it on the horn next Tuesday. We're going to talk about torture, and I assure you, Mike Lane is going to argue that this was really useful stuff, that we got all this useful information. Well, I'll tell you this. He doesn't know, and I don't know. That's classified. And you've got people in the Bush administration saying we got really useful stuff, and you've got other people who were there saying, well, you know, we didn't really learn that much. We don't know. But whether or not it's useful, it's unlawful. I have this weird, some might say fixation, for the idea that laws should be obeyed or we should change the law. I believe in working within the system. Yes, there are times when you have to do civil disobedience. There are times when the system itself is unfair. But people who commit civil disobedience know that they're breaking the law and are willing to take the consequences. The fact that this was illegal, that this was against the Geneva Conventions, which were set up to prevent some of the horrors that occurred in World War II, never seems to come across the Republicans' mind. They seem to think that the law, that the lawyers, that it can be all fixed around the policy, right? Just as you can fix facts around policy, you can fix law around policy. You can train lawyers like SEALs to say or do anything. Bounce that ball on your nose, John Yoo. Why don't you claim that 11 days of no sleep, but not 12, doesn't shock the conscience? That water temperatures of 41, but not 40, don't. Where do you come up with these things? One of the things John McCain argued just yesterday when talking about the fact that he didn't want the lawyers to be prosecuted is he said, well, we don't want people who give their best information, their best advice to the president, to fear prosecution. And you know what? In general, I agree with John McCain. I think that lawyers who reasonably look at the law and come to their conclusion and do so independently based on the law and the statutes and the precedents and all the other things we lawyers are trained to look at, and then give the president their best advice, I don't think they should be prosecuted. I agree with you, John McCain. But is that what happened in this case? Did John Yoo give George Bush his best advice? Or did John Yoo tell Dick Cheney what Dick Cheney wanted to hear? Seems like the latter is true. As I said, I know John Yoo. He's hardly a friend, but he was an acquaintance in law school. And I have no doubt he would have done anything his bosses wanted him to do. So it really isn't about John Yoo. It's about his bosses. When we come back, I want to get your advice. I want to talk with you about who should be prosecuted. There are many levels of prosecution, everywhere from Bush and Cheney, down a step to Rumsfeld and Rice, down a step to the lawyers, John Yoo, Jay Bybee, down a step to the CIA officers that ordered torture, down a step to the CIA people and a few Defense Department people who actually committed the torture. Off to the side, the psychiatrists and doctors who witnessed the torture and didn't say anything. Who should be prosecuted? What's the purpose of the prosecution? Our president says he wants to move forward, not backward. He doesn't want to ratchet up in a feeding frenzy that leads to an excessive partisanship that keeps America from proceeding forward on all these other ideas that he has that are good ones on health care and energy and education. And I get it. I get it. But shouldn't someone be prosecuted here? And if so, whom? Should the Nuremberg laws apply here? Should people who are just following orders be prosecuted? I'll give you my thoughts, but I want to hear from you. I want to know what you think. It's 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. We'll be right back after this.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive Magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Happy Earth Day. This is a day that really resonates with me. You see, I've been a bird watcher since I was 4 years old when I got fascinated by the ring-necked pheasants that wandered into our backyard in the Chicago suburbs. I've been hooked on birds and attuned to the environment ever since. There's something almost intrinsic about a kid loving nature. I was reminded of this recently when I was interviewing the documentary filmmaker Robert Stone, who's got a new film coming out called Earth Days. Like me and maybe like you, Robert Stone got fascinated with the living things around him in rural New Jersey when he was a boy. He made the point that environmentalism is the easiest door to walk through for young people or for previously apolitical people. In Earth Days, he tells the story of the astronaut Rusty Schweikert, who got turned on to the green cause when he was in outer space looking back at planet Earth. But you and I and our kids don't need to go up in a spaceship to appreciate the beauty and the wonder of the land and the waters and the sky and all nature's gifts. All we need to do is open our eyes now wherever we are and show nature the respect it deserves. Then we can begin anew to save it. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. We've talked about who was tortured. We've talked about why people were tortured. And to be clear, there were people who were tortured that are no doubt evil, nasty bastards. Right? I have no sympathy for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. There were also people that were tortured that were completely innocent. Next week, when you hear me discuss this issue with Republican Mike Lane, I'm going to ask him about the case of Murat Kurnaz. I've already given him the case now, so he'll have a full week to try to come up with an excuse to explain why we tortured this man. This man was born in Bremen, Germany. His parents had immigrated from Turkey a generation earlier. Turkey, of course, while an Islamic country is, I think, without a doubt, the most moderate Islamic country on earth. They are a secular democracy. They have been for, well nigh 50-plus years now. And, frankly, are considering joining the European Union. I don't have to agree with every decision Turkey makes, just like I don't agree with every decision England or France makes, but they're hardly a hotbed of radical Islamicism. If anything, they're a hotbed of moderate Islamicism. Anyway, his parents emigrated from Turkey. He grew up all his life in Bremen. He was going to get married to a girl who was a bit more religious than he. He didn't even know how to pray in a mosque. So he decided to learn a little bit more about his religion in order to marry this more religious girl. He went to Pakistan and had the sore misfortune of, as he was heading back on a bus to Germany, to the airport, to fly back to Germany, was picked up by some Pakistanis who were paid a $3,000 bounty for suspicious foreigners. He was light-skinned. Pakistanis are darker-skinned. Wow, talk about a certain kind of reverse racism. We're going to go into more detail about this. I'm going to play this for you next week as I play it for Mike Lane, as I try to figure out how he justifies Kurnaz being beaten, his head underwater, shocked with electricity, hoisted on chains, even though U.S. and German intelligence confirmed that he had nothing whatsoever to do with Al-Qaeda. Oops. Oops. Uh-oh. Didn't mean to torture an innocent person. Sorry. Here's $100. Shut up and... In fact, one of the things that we asked him to do, after spending 5 years in Afghanistan and Guantanamo Bay, until finally Chancellor Merkel of Germany made a personal appeal to George Bush in person, and he was freed. But in those 5 years of misery, even after it's over, even if they were flying him in shackles on a plane back to Germany, even then they asked him to sign a confession, and the guy, to his credit, didn't. He's braver than John McCain. In the 60 Minutes interview, which, by the way, is a year old now, this isn't new stuff. This isn't new stuff at all. This came out a year ago in March of 2008. This isn't like the case of Maher Arar, who I've also talked about. He was an innocent Canadian that we shipped to Syria to be beaten with cables. We could say, well, you know, we didn't think that this brutal Syrian government would beat him. Yeah, right. But this is a case of us doing it, right? So you can't even blame another nation here. In construing the policy on torture, you're gonna hear from Republicans. You're gonna hear from Fox News. Now, I've already heard from Fox News. You're going to hear from Mike Lane next week. Well, we got useful information. I'll concede the point. Well, I'll partly concede the point. I will concede that Abu Zubaydah gave us useful information. That seems to be something that everyone involved has said. Many say that he did it before he was tortured. Many say that we may have given more without torturing him, that we can never know that. But is it worth it to torture 100 people in the hopes that one will give you useful information? To me, this goes back to our nation's founding principles, innocent until proven guilty. We could round up 100 people on the street who we think have done some criminal acts, and in doing so, we may put in jail 3 criminals, of which one... There just wasn't evidence, right? He did this awful thing, and we didn't have the evidence, and he would have been acquitted in the court, but we put this bad guy in jail that we wouldn't otherwise have put in jail. We can do that. Let's say that, you know, there are 2 people who did some crime that we could prove in court. One did a crime we couldn't prove, and 97 are innocent. We could throw them all in jail. But our founders decided that we were going to err on the side of letting one guilty person free rather than erring on the side of putting innocent people in jail. How much greater is that principle when it comes to torture? I mean, putting an innocent man in jail is something that we do. I like to think that it's rarely done intentionally, though in the case of Governor Spiegelman, it clearly was. But mistakes are made. Eyewitnesses make mistakes. We put innocent people in jail. And then, you know, we free them. Like this man that was in jail for 26 years that was just freed recently. Oops, sorry. How much worse when we torture someone? I mean, how much worse if, you know, talk about the death penalty. And I'm someone who, unlike most many liberals, I actually support the death penalty in very, very limited circumstances. But never, never, never when there's any possibility of an innocent person being put to death. But in some ways, torturing an innocent person may even be worse than killing an innocent person. In any case, it was against the law. And whatever the policy was, whether you think it's moral or not, and I'm sure that Mike Lane is going to argue we have to torture some people next week. One of the reasons I have, and I get questioned all the time when I invite Republicans on my show, I think it's important to see how they think and to challenge them on their thoughts and to hear, even if it's spin bites, hear their very weak responses. But even if you think this is a good idea, it was against the law. And that means that people have to be prosecuted. So I understand President Obama's legal distinction. I do. I understand him saying that if a CIA agent truly felt he was following the law, reasonably felt he was, or she, mostly he, was following the law, that he shouldn't be prosecuted. Now that goes against the Nuremberg principles that say if you're asked to do something illegal, well, not illegal. If you're asked to do something that is legal but grossly immoral, like shooting a bunch of children dead, there's no excuse to say you were just following orders. I agree with the Nuremberg principles, but I also understand that as awful as this torture was, it wasn't quite the same as massacring innocents. It wasn't. There are levels of evil. So I'm willing to say that the CIA officers, if they truly believe they were following the law, I'm actually willing to give them a pass. Y'all may disagree with me. If you do, call it 877-4 head on. But I do not believe in giving the people who ordered the policy a pass. The lawyers knew they were breaking the law. I don't mind holding a lawyer to a higher standard. The doctors knew they were breaking their ethical codes. But even their crimes pale in comparison with the people at the very top. I think one of the reasons why Republicans are most afraid to prosecute the people who should be prosecuted most, the reason why Dick Cheney was so angry when President Obama disclosed the memos, is because if you want to know the worst torturer in America, if Dick Cheney was looking for him, all he had to do was look in the mirror every morning. Republicans understand that this came from the very, very top. Ironically, if this had all been John Yoo's idea or Jay Bybee's idea, who's now, by the way, a judge on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, you know, the circuit courts, the second highest courts in the nation after the Supreme Court. If it had just been John Yoo or Bybee's ideas, probably you wouldn't find the resistance to prosecuting them. Throw them out under the bus. We're done. But to truly prosecute this where it came from, I don't even think Rumsfeld and Rice are high enough. I think you'd have to put Dick Cheney in prison. And that scares the heck out of Republicans. And you know what? It scares the heck out of Democrats, too. We have never put a president or vice president in prison before. Even Richard Nixon was pardoned. I understand why people are afraid to do this. And yet, who is the proper one to be punished? To me, the CIA officers who did this, again, assuming, as President Obama says, they were working within the confines of what they thought was the law, they did bad, but they were the least of all evils. The lawyers and physicians, I think, were higher up. The lawyers particularly. I have a certain feeling about people who commit my craft. And again, I'm not attacking any lawyer who reasonably makes a colorable decision, a non-frivolous decision, who says, you know what, the law could go this way or that way. But I got real problems with lawyers that say, oh, the law says you can use 41 degrees, but not 40 degrees. Yeah, no. But their crime pales in comparison with the very top. And that's why I was very glad to see that when President Obama was pressed, he agreed that no man was above the law. and that the highest law enforcement official of the United States, the Attorney General of the United States, Eric Holder, would have to review to determine who to prosecute. The damage has been done. Whatever information that we may have gotten from torture, and I think that's still very unclear. Maybe we'll find out more in days to come. But according to our Director of National Intelligence, Dennis Blair, the damage caused by the use of waterboarding to the country's image, the damage caused by walling and stress positions and cold and hot and to our image exceeds, that damage exceeds any potential benefits. It becomes a recruitment tool for the very people that we want to stop, the very people who I fear right now are starting to take over in Pakistan. And I'm not saying they're not dangerous. I think some neglect the real danger that the real terrorists provide. I am not saying that Al-Qaeda is not a danger. They're a huge danger, and I really fear what's happening in Pakistan. I'm going to talk more about that tomorrow because it's very, very scary. But do we help Al-Qaeda or do we hurt them when we torture them? Republicans say we hurt them because we find out more information. I say we help them because we give them recruitment techniques. And at the end of the day, isn't that the difference between us and them? Isn't that the reason why we love our country? Isn't that the reason why America used to be looked at as a hope, as a beacon of freedom to the rest of the world? Isn't that why the Chinese in Tiananmen Square raised the Statue of Liberty back in 1989? Because we are seen as different. Sadly, too often, we're not. Now, in the past, we've been caught doing things like training other countries to do torture. We taught the Shah of Iran how to do torture. We taught a lot of Latin American dictatorships how to do torture. But bringing it here at home, I think that's new. Have we ever gone this far in the past? And here you have all these international laws designed to protect things from ever happening again, like happened in World War II. Things like you have to allow the Red Cross to come in and visit. And we kept them out. So at the end of the day, who should be prosecuting? One thing about prosecuting those CIA agents, some of the things they did before they got approval. Now, those are outside of President Obama's restriction that they are acting in good faith within what they believe to be the law. In fact, some argue that the reason the Bush administration approved these things is because it was done anyway, and then they were retroactively approving it, which makes both the CIA officers and the administration look bad. But I see nothing wrong with holding our country to a higher standard. Sometimes I fear that some people don't often talk about the real dangers in the world. The fact that Hamas last week was busy chopping the arms and legs off of people that were in Fatah, killing dozens of innocent people, that didn't get any news. I understand that when democracies act, their actions are under more scrutiny, and I think that is unfair. I think we can never deny or in any way play down the real dangers from really dangerous people in places like Iran and Pakistan and so forth. We should never let our own criticism of our own government in any way hide the fact that, yes, far worse things do happen around the world, and that's true, and I expect Mike Lane to say that, and he's right. He's right. For all the horrors of George Bush and Dick Cheney, I'd rather have them run my country than Ahmadinejad or Osama bin Laden. But you know what? That's not the standard under which I judge my country. I don't hold my country to the standards in which I hold a Saddam Hussein or a Osama bin Laden or an Ahmadinejad or a Hezbollah. I expect us to have higher standards. I expect us to be strong enough to be able to protect our freedom, to protect our liberty, to protect against terrorism, at the same time protect our values. Because you know what? If you don't like the Bill of Rights, if you don't like the Eighth Amendment, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment, if you don't like the Geneva Conventions that say we can't torture people, then let's do it lawfully. Let's have a debate. Let's bring it out before the entire public, and let's formally withdraw from the convention. Let's formally abolish the Eighth Amendment. Let's say America tortures. Let's be honest about it. And if you note, the real problem that Republicans have with this entire debate is that it's being held in open. The main thing they fear is people knowing about it. Because they want the hypocrisy of saying we don't torture when we do torture. Of saying we don't have secret prisons when we do have secret prisons. On saying we believe in a higher standard of treatment and democracy when in secret we don't. They want it both ways. And when the hypocrisy is exposed, they howl. And that's why they're so angry right now. Next week, I'm going to play the clip when the Defense Department denies any brutal treatment of Mr. Kurnaz or anything like that. It's amazing how their denials ring so hollow today. For them, it is the exposure of their techniques that scares them the most. And that is why we need to give it the most light of day so that the cockroaches scurry under the furniture. That's it for the Inside Scoop. Tune in tomorrow. Next up, Bob Kincaid. This is Mark Levine signing off.